Come down here and hunting sometimes.
Yeah, man. Come down. A lot of wild pigs out here. Alexander Gustafson, ladies and gentlemen, we're live. Good to see you, buddy. What's happening?
Good to be here. I'm good.
You just recovering from shoulder surgery?
Did you have shoulder?
What'd you have done?
I was wrestling. A wrestling practice. I got taken down, believe it or not. I actually slammed. I was trying to pose with my arm, and mm-hmm. I was slammed, so just felt something in my shoulder, basically, and it didn't hurt at first. I was trying to stand up, and I felt it was just a mess in there. And after that, I went to the hospital, and from there, I've been rehabbing. I got a plate inside.
Oh wow, a plate!
Yeah, I took it out now in end of last year, but I had a plate for a couple of months. Yeah.
What was the extent of the injury?
Nothing was broken. It was more like the collarbone just dislocated, ripped apart from my shoulder. So they had to put it back in, put the plate on, 3 screws down. That's the first real injury I had for my whole career. I had bruises, stitches, and all that, but this is the first real. I had some problem with my back, but
pull this thing right in front of your face there. So it's
sorry.
It's under your Viking beard. It's getting muffled up. So were there tendons torn or ligaments? Or
yeah, like ligaments, tendons, everything just torn apart.
Wow. So they stitched it all back together again, put a plate in there.
Yeah. And now I've been rehabbing. I feel fine. I'm 100% now. So I'm in training.
So how many months was it?
Well, this happened in August. And I took away the plate end of last year. And I've been rehabbing for a couple of months. So yeah, I have 6 months totally, maybe.
Oh, yeah. So I was, when you grabbed the bow and you were pulling it back, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have him do that. Cause that's like, you know, that kind of movement is like bench pressing.
Yeah, but I'm fine now. I'm good. It's all good.
That's
good. That bow was powerful, though. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. It's no joke.
It's good.
That's some real shit. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely good, like, back training if you wanted to work on those muscles. They're very specific.
100%.
Yeah. But so when you do that, do you go through, are you doing like platelet rich plasma and all sorts of different therapies to try to like accelerate the healing?
Well, I've done my physical rehab. I've done a lot of I don't know the word in English, but a lot of acupuncture.
Acupuncture.
Yeah, a lot of massage, a lot of rehab and lifting small weights.
Mm-hmm.
Really boring stuff. I hate that stuff. I hate it so much, but you just have to do it. It's just tiny weights. I started with that, and then I've just been increasing, and now that's it.
Well,
boring ass rehabbing.
You know, obviously I'm a big fan of yours, and I was very worried when after the Glover Teixeira fight, which I thought was like your masterpiece so far.
Appreciate
in your career.
That. Thank you.
Well, it's just, you've always been a very, very good fighter, but when you see a guy hit this new level, and that's what I felt like you were in the Glover fight. I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, that combination that you finished him off with, that was some video game shit.
That was crazy.
It was for yourself, too, right?
Yeah, no, it was just standing there. And he ate my shot. He ate my uppercuts.
Yeah.
Uppercut worked all night.
It was crazy. So then when I heard that you were injured after that, I'm like, ah, shit. Like, you were just catching your stride. It was just a perfect performance.
No, I know. That's what I felt, because I felt like you said, I had everything to go. I had such a flow in training, in life generally. Everything felt really good. And I'm hungry. I was motivated. I'm very motivated. But that time after that win, and Glover is a tough opponent, and everything went so well with the fight and everything, and I felt really good. And then this happened. So it was a big setback, but what doesn't kill you makes you strong, right? So I just kept working on it, and I just looked forward, and I got a goal in my sight. That's it.
Well, the one thing that is good about something like that is it really gives you time to pause and reflect and pay attention to all the other aspects of your game. And you're such a footwork-heavy, movement-heavy guy as
it is. That's
my
thing, footwork.
Yeah. But it's so unusual for a guy as tall and as big as you to be so agile and have so much footwork and movement. I mean, it must be a giant asset for you in fighting.
It is. And for the Glover fight, I could do that for 10 rounds. I wasn't tired at all. I did my thing and I was out of there. I wasn't in his pocket. I wasn't in his range.
Right.
Then I did my thing again and I was out of there. I could do that all night long. And that's also a thing, like, I knew I always had it, but after that fight, I really felt that this is working. This is my thing and this is what I'm going to use and I'm going to get better at it. I'm going to get better in everything, the whole game, but this is my key thing. This is it. And I know...
Movement and footwork.
If I fought DC, like I fought Glover, I'll beat him all day long, I'm telling you. I'll beat him.
Well, it was a very close fight the first time you guys fought.
Yeah, I didn't do it enough, man. I was in his pocket too much.
One of the things that I really like about you, Alex, is that when you talk about yourself, you're very hard on yourself. You know, like, I like that. One of the things that you said is that you're never satisfied. This is the life of a high-level athlete. Never satisfied.
Never, never. I just want to improve all the time. And I've always been that guy, always been that person, always had to take the hard way in stuff, learning new stuff. I have to all the time take the hard way, you know. I always had to take a beating first before I win. And that's how it's been. And that just makes me stronger. And I got that fire in me and it just grows.
Yeah, well, you're still young. I mean, how old are you now?
31, not that young.
That's young, though. I mean, consider how long you've been fighting in the UFC. I mean, how old were you when you had your first fight in the UFC?
21, 22.
That's crazy.
It's 10 years now.
That's crazy.
It's 10 years.
Do you think about yourself as 21 fighting in the UFC? Like, what?
Yeah, no, it feels like... But I think it's 10 years, it's always 10 years, but it feels like it was yesterday.
I'm sure.
Time runs, especially in this business, because your life is... It's all about the next fight. It's always about planning for the next fight. So years are just passing me by.
Well, you also have constant growth and improvement, but it gets tested in these big jumps, like every 3 times a year, 2 times a year, whatever it is your schedule that you're fighting on.
Yeah.
You get these big tests, and you get to find out how applicable everything that you've worked on is.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it is, and you feel. After that test, you just feel like, what's next?
Yeah.
What should I do next? What's the next improvement? What's the next opponent? Where's the belt? Stuff like that, you know?
When you get off of you had like one of the most spectacular fights with John Jones. I mean, down to the wire, like as close as it gets. And when you get out of a fight like that, where you almost won the title against the greatest of all time, like, what is that feeling like, and where do you go from there?
It was tough. It was really tough because, you know, everybody was saying, like, you're winning this fight. You had 3 rounds against him. Like, you're winning this fight. Like, it felt like you said, it was just right there at the goal line. I didn't really pass that goal line at all. I just felt like... It was tough, but like now, sitting here now talking to you, it's a really good experience for me, and it's a good time for me. The fight was a highlight in my career for sure, in my life for sure.
It was such a close fight. When the scorecards are being tabbed and you're just sitting there waiting for the decision, did you think you had it?
You know, I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know.
So much chaos. Could you even remember what had happened over the last 5 rounds?
I remember the fight. I remember almost the whole fight, but it was just... John Jones is such a beast. I'm telling you, just for me, John Jones, winning over John Jones is bigger than taking the belt. I'm telling you, that guy is... The guy is such a beast, and what was the question?
It's okay. I mean, express yourself. That's fine. I mean, I agree with you. He is a beast. You know, I'm very disappointed with all the stuff that's happened to him, obviously, and especially the most recent one, which I really believe, based on the evidence, is a mistake. Yeah. I think he got a hold of something tainted, because if they tested him before that, he was negative. They tested him after that, he was negative. And what he tested for was such a minuscule amount There's no way it was something that he, yeah, there's no way. Like, according to Nowitzki and according to USADA, according to, like, how they test people, whatever he consumed must have been an extremely small amount. It wasn't an amount that would have had any benefit whatsoever in terms of performance enhancing.
Well, they know the thing, so, you know, that, you know, if just let the, you know, expert handle that. I don't know what to say. I know for a fact that he's been in that same situation a couple of times. This is not the first time, so,
yeah.
You know, it's
just, well, he definitely is a wild motherfucker.
He is. He is.
He definitely does some shit he probably shouldn't do, but
yeah, 100%, man.
But I mean,
but the thing is, it's so stupid because he is what he is. He's the best guy pound for pound out there. He's done things nobody else has done. He's just a beast, and still shit just comes up all the time. He doesn't even need that steroids. He doesn't even need that shit in him. He's still the best guy out there.
I don't think he took anything. I really don't, but I agree with you on that. And I think you need a guy like that. You need a guy like that out there, like to bring you to your full potential. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, no, like I said to you, fighting him and beating him, that's bigger than taking the belt right now. That's how I feel. Because he's, look what he did to DC, man.
Yeah,
and DC is tough. He's really, he finished DC.
Yeah.
That's just insane. So.
It is just insane, yeah. And he finished him with a kick that DC said he's never going to hit him with.
Yeah.
That's what was crazy.
that's insane, yeah.
He's like, you're never going to hit me with that left eye kick? Oh, he went there, bam. Yeah.
You just look for the opportunity and takes it.
Yeah, tendencies are crazy. It's just some of them just get so ingrained in the way your body moves and the way you operate. Yeah.
No, he's an expert. What he's doing, and he's studying his opponent very well. Everything is just such planned in details for the fights, and he knows exactly when he should go for that or that or that, and staying creative and using his fantasy, and it's amazing to see.
Yeah, that Jackson Winklejohn team is a truly exceptional team. I mean, they really did do phenomenal with him. Now, where you're at now is a very interesting situation because John is in exile. No one knows what's going to happen in terms of how long he's going to be suspended. DC is now fighting Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title, and who knows what's happening there. I mean, does that bother you? Because it seems like it kind of like puts the 205 title in limbo.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I didn't see that coming at all. This is Stipe fight at all. You know, it's a great fight for them and for the fans and for the sport. But, you know, for us standing in line, we're just sitting there we're just sitting there and waiting for an opportunity, and it's not going to come. It's not going to be there. So, you know, that's also a thing that's been motivating me a lot because after the fight with Glover, I got injured and all that, and I was really looking forward to come back and make a really strong performance, you know, a very strong next performance. I just really wanted to, I had my eyes on that goal, and then I actually counted almost, you know, fighting DC. But then it was all gone by him going up to Stipe. So it's a crazy situation. The whole division is just crazy right now.
Yeah, it really is, because that fight is not even going to take place until July. So here we are in April, May, June, July. We have 3 months till that fight takes place.
I know.
So that fight, and then obviously at least 3 months, most likely more, before the title could be challenged again. So that's...
We don't even know if it's coming. If it comes back again,
right? He might
not. Who knows what happens in that fight?
Plus, once he gets used to eating again, like, you know, it's DC. Be tough if DC wins.
I see it in pictures now. You know, I'm going to meet him a couple of days. he looks a little bit, you know, heavy right now.
Well, he was on TV the other day eating potato chips. Yeah, like, I saw man, that. You're in yeah, camp. I saw that. What the fuck are you eating?
No, he loved that.
Yeah, he loves food. That's for sure. I mean, and you know, you look back at his performance in Strikeforce as a heavyweight, and it was phenomenal.
He did good.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
He didn't lose.
No, he didn't lose at heavyweight. And
he's
and
good.
Tossed around gorillas like Josh Barnett.
Yeah. Lift him up like nothing.
Crazy, right? He's,
you know, this fight against Stipe, it's, you know, if it would be another, I guess, another heavyweight, I'd probably say Stipe was going to win this fight. But DC is, like you said, he's he's a really good heavyweight, so who knows what happens.
Well, his wrestling is just so next level.
Yeah.
It's such a, it's an interesting position, because Stipe is a very good wrestler, but of course, DC's world class.
He's world class, and he doesn't take one step back, man. He just comes at you.
Yeah.
He's just in your face. You know,
but it's tough to count out Stipe, too, because Stipe is the pound-for-pound consensus best heavyweight ever. I mean, the guy has defended the title more than anybody. You look at his resume, it's impeccable. Yeah. Knocks out Junior Dos Santos, knocks out Overeem, beats Francis Ngannou, who's everybody's scared of. I mean, phenomenal.
No, he's a badass. He's a badass.
Yeah.
So, you know, but DC, he's such a competitive guy. You know, he doesn't take a step back, and he just goes for it. Even in a tough situation, he just eats it and comes back and do what he does always. And for being a fat guy, that guy works.
He's screaming at you right now. Hey man, settle down.
Well, no, but that guy is doing five rounds like nothing.
Yeah.
So the conditioning is on top.
Yeah, he just eats the wrong food.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some of it's genetic. I just think he's just eating the wrong food. I mean, there's evidence.
He's eating potato chips. Man. Yeah.
I mean, there's evidence. It's not like I'm just talking out of my ass. I've seen him eat the wrong food.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
But yeah, nothing but respect for that guy. He's an awesome human being too.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's a great guy. He's
a fantastic guy. Have you ever thought about fighting heavyweight?
It crossed my mind from time to time, but I feel I'm not done with, and I'm not done in light heavyweight yet. I have still things to do.
What do you walk around at?
I'm heavy. Yeah. I'm heavy.
I'm
calling DC fat, but you know, I probably shouldn't say anything.
Yeah, but you have an excuse.
I've been in America for 2 days. I gained directly 10 pounds.
Oh,
just
yeah.
being here.
All our GMO food fucks you up. You. So, like, what when you normally are getting down to 205, what do you walk around at?
To, you know, maybe I'll stop my camps in 235.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I go up to 240 sometimes.
No kidding. Wow. Are you healthy at 240 or are you just like...
I move like never before. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I got some speed in my footwork. I just...
Do you feel good at 240?
I feel pretty good being heavy. I do. And I feel strong. I feel strong. I'm sparring big guys. I'm sparring heavy guys. And I feel really strong in being a heavyweight. But like I told you, man, I'm not finishing light yet.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. But how much of you gets diminished in that cut to 205?
Not that bad.
No?
It's like, you know, when I start, because off season I do 8 to 10 sessions a week. I don't stress. You know, I don't eat shit food. Of course, sometimes I drink a couple of beers, so I have a pizza, whatever. You know, I have to live sometimes. You know, but it's good. You know, good regular meals. Doing a little bit of lifting, some weights, and I don't. You know, when I stop my camps, it's like my body feels like, okay, it's time now to start working here, and I start doing my sprints, and my miles on the treadmill. You know, from 1 week to another, I maybe lose like 10 pounds. It's crazy. It's like my body just knows, okay, it's time to work, and then I just drops like nothing.
Wow. So your body's just accustomed to the drop.
Yeah. And I feel it's because, you know, I've done it many times, so it's just like. You know the routines.
No, I know you do a lot of hunting, and you were showing me some photos before the podcast. Do you incorporate wild game into your diet?
That's all I do.
Yeah.
That's all I do. I wouldn't say never, but I barely buy anything from the store when it comes to meat or all that. I just hunt everything I eat. I try to support my family with what I'm hunting. You know, I'm hunting a lot of wild boars. We have a lot of wild boars in Sweden. I'm hunting deers. We got red deer, fallow deers. We got moose. And you can't compare the meat. It's a science just to cook it right. But if you cook it right and you know what you're doing, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, I agree. And I've always wondered, like, as a professional athlete, what it would be like whether or not you see the benefit in eating such protein-rich, nutrient-dense meat as opposed to pasture-raised or farm, you know, cattle.
You can compare it.
Yeah.
You can compare it. And everything around it too, you know, they're suffering. They do like it's not a good business at all. I don't like that business. I don't want to support it at all. So I'd rather do my hunting.
No, I agree. And I mean, there's, to me, it's the best way. If you're going to eat meat, it's absolutely the best way. But what I'm thinking is, like, I don't know a lot of pro athletes that only eat wild game and only hunt wild game, but I would think that there would be a great benefit in that.
100%. 100%. You can't get better nutrition to your body than eating that meat. It's the best thing there is. You know, I feel, even like, just take, how do you feel after eating like a 400 gram steak after eating like a 400 gram whatever deer it is you've been hunting? You don't feel right. The same. You don't feel tired. You don't feel like you're getting this food coma and stuff like that. Right. You feel fresh.
Yeah, fresh. It's weird, right? It's a wild game has almost an invigorating sensation to it when you eat it. Like it actually feels
you feel strong. Good. You feel strong. Yeah. You feel good about doing it.
How long have you been hunting?
I've been hunting since a kid. I grew up on a farm, and my dad was hunting a lot when I was a kid. And then I didn't hunt for a long time, and I get back to 2012. Actually, I took my license and I just. And after that, I've been hunting. If I don't train, I'm outdoors. If I don't train, I'm outdoors. And we have seasons in Sweden, so it's not like you're hunting all year round.
Right.
But I make sure I fill the freezer under those seasons. So yeah, when I'm not training, I'm hunting.
That's awesome, man.
Well, you don't use bows there, though. It's
not legal, right?
No.
Yeah.
Only guns.
A lot of European rifles. Countries. I know in Spain it's legal.
Okay.
In Spain, where you said you hunted those red deer?
Yeah.
You can. I have a friend of mine who lives in Spain. He's a big bow hunter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, it's only rifles in Sweden.
Yeah.
But that works too, man.
It works. Yeah. I mean, it's the most effective way for sure. And obviously, you can shoot them at a higher distance. And a lot of people think it's more humane too.
Yeah.
If you're not good with a bow, they're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
But when it comes to the feeling of being outdoors, being close to the animal and stuff like that, I don't even think you can compare it to actually the bow hunting.
No,
it's a whole other technique. It's a whole way to hunt.
Well, a guy like you who loves challenges, who thrives off of that, you would thrive. No,
I haven't
off
done
of
it,
hunting.
But if I try, I'd probably love it.
Listen, man, I'll hook you up.
I appreciate
I'll set
that.
It all
yeah, I'll
up.
Be back. I'll be back.
My friend John Dudley is tall like you too, so he'd be the perfect guy to coach you. He could
sounds
explain
great.
It to you and take you out on a hunt.
Yeah, no, I can't wait, man. I love that.
Well, especially that. Wild pigs. There's a place that he has in Oklahoma that they hunt a lot of wild pigs. I mean, they just have to eradicate them. There's so many of them.
I heard about it.
Yeah.
It's too many. It's too many. And how they hunt them too is kind of crazy.
Oh, the ones in Texas where they do it from helicopters?
Yeah, I saw that on YouTube channels and stuff like that. Going crazy down there.
They just have to. I mean, Texas is so big, and there's so many pigs. There's millions and millions of pigs there, and they're constantly breeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll have like 3-4 litters a year, and each litter they'll have 4-6 piglets, and they just keep going and going and going and going, and there's just no end.
Wow.
And they don't have very many predators. So a few mountain lions take them out occasionally, but for the most part, they're just running and gunning, and they keep breeding.
Do they get big in here?
Yeah, the they pigs? Get big. Yeah,
they do.
Get big. Several hundred pounds. Yeah.
That's
craziness. It's common to see 300-400 pound pigs.
Wow. In Sweden, we have a couple of them, but they don't get that big, though. And the thing is, how we hunt them in Sweden is when the farmers, when they, you know, they have all their acres and all the, you know, the lands, they actually call us in.
Because the pigs?
Yeah. To help them out. And we just out there all night. The sun never goes down in Sweden in summer times.
Oh, really?
Now we had like a midnight sun. It's so cozy being out there. It's kind of warm. It's nice. You're going around. You're checking the lands, and it's pretty good, man. You would like it.
I'm sure I would. Yeah. I've only been to Sweden once for the UFC when I was there, but I loved it. Stockholm's a beautiful city.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed it there.
Thank you.
Very nice people too.
Oh, they are. They are. They are. So. Thanks.
So, how did you get aligned with Alliance? How did that wind up happening? Where you started coming to America to train? And how far into your career was that?
Right off the field fight.
Really?
Yeah, right off the field fight. And back then, we didn't have those resources in Stockholm at all.
And you say Phil Davis, we're talking about. Phil,
yeah, Phil
Mr.
Davis.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Mr.
So
Wonderful.
Who is also an Alliance fighter.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, man, that you guys fought and then you went to train with him.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
It went good. You know, he just kicked my ass the first couple of times before I started learning the whole wrestling part and
yeah.
how even to defend a takedown. And after that, I just become good at it. I really enjoy coming down here, meeting the guys and training. It's a whole other type of life.
Well, yeah. It's so cool that he accepted you, after you were opponent too and had you come and learn with them.
Yeah, we just talked after the fight right away, and I just swallowed my pride, and I would just talk to him after the fight, and like, now he invited me over, and we just came over, and we had no idea what to expect, and I remember we landed at nighttime, so we went to the gym to sleep. I woke up the day after. And I was hitting the bags down there, like in the mat area, like early now, super early. I'm like, who is this? I went down. It was Phil. It was hitting the bags, and I felt so like, oh damn, I have to do this too. I have to. then we started to train together. So it was a really good time. And he came actually down to us to help me out with Glover Teixeira too.
So you went to Sweden?
Yeah,
I went to Sweden.
For a couple of weeks. So, and he fought Glover too, and that, and it means so much to me to have these guys training with me, with Phil, Ilie Latifi, have Jimmy Manoa and all those guys.
Yeah,
such a great guys, and love training with them. And it makes my training steps up even more. We have a bunch of guys. We have like Russian coming in. We established a really good place now at All Stars in Sweden and Europe, around Europe, and getting so much good guys, and my level of fighting just rises through the top, man. I'm telling you, if I spar with Phil, Jimmy, or Ilie, I just feel like every day is a fight. You can't be relaxed. You can't just throw a jab and don't care about the counter. You have to. Such amazing training.
Well, it's so fantastic, too. Over the last decade, the level of talent that's coming out of Europe has just escalated. It's been so different and so big. And the wrestling, too, which is a big part of it. So much more wrestling, so much more talent.
Exactly. Now, we have guys coming from Uzbekistan. We have different Russian countries down there. They're coming in, and those guys are beasts. I'm telling you, they are beasts. And they're the driving, their double legs, the takedowns, they eat shots though. They eat shots. They take it like nothing, and it just comes at you. So they make me work a lot, and that's exactly what I need. Exactly what I need.
Yeah, that's been one of the more interesting things over the last 5 or 6 years is the rise of the Russians. There's been so many from the former Soviet Union.
Yeah. Now they have such a working capacity. They work a lot. We have a couple of guys down at the gym now, and they're at the gym when I come to the gym, they're at the gym when I leave the gym. They never leave. They live in there though, so they never leave basically. But
they
on the
live
mats,
there, so they actually do.
Yeah,
live
we have a facility so people can stay and train.
Oh,
so
that's excellent.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they just work, man. They work all day long.
That's a great asset to have, a facility where people can train and live there. I know American Top Team put something like that in. Winklejohn and Greg Jackson put something like that in. That's got to help so much, where young guys who don't have much money but want a place to train.
100%. It's a really good way to also to give something back, man. It's they have their rooms to sleep in. We manage so they have really good foods in to bring lunches and stuff. We also got it from here, because we at the beginning when we came to San Diego, like I told you, it was another type of training, another type of lifestyle, and we saw that, me and my coach Andreas Michael. So we just, after doing this years and years and years, we now managed to do it at home, and I just love it. I've been traveling all my career to America to train and around the place. So we established a good training system that works, and we establish it good, and I feel great to be home. When you're getting a family and stuff, I'm 31 years old, and it works, man. It works. I've never been in that shape of my life than I've been, like, training at home and feeling good.
That's fantastic. Where you don't have to drain yourself by flying over across the country, exactly, and staying somewhere you don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. You were a real pioneer in terms of like European mixed martial arts. What is it like now seeing all this sort of explode around you? I mean, it's become so popular all over the world now. I mean, MMA from when you started 10 years ago to now, it's barely recognizable.
No, you were a gangster back then.
Yeah.
Or you were a psychopath. Either one or two of those when you're training. Like, but nowadays, it's amazing. You know, I walk around in Stockholm and people are young kids. They know even more than I know.
Right.
About the techniques, about the sport. We have all ladies and all gentlemen coming in, want an autograph or a picture. It's grown so much. It's like you said, it's been exploded all over the world.
Now, what I was getting at was that when you first started out, how much of a structure was in place, like in terms of like how much strength and conditioning you should do, how much sparring you should do, how much drilling you should do?
You know, I let Andreas Michael to handle that to me. He's a mastermind of coaching. He puts me in situations. I hate him. It's the worst ever. I'm telling you, we've always been fighting. Sometimes, you know, being like, but he has this old mentality of training. We don't do too much of the scientific thing, like with, you know, you watch your pulse, you measure your thing. Mm-hmm. We just do the hardcore things, and of course we do that too, the scientific a little bit, but not too much. So we're trying to balance it out. He plans everything out. He's a mastermind of coaching, and he knows me in and out, and I know him.
That's another very important part in the development of young fighters, is having someone that they can entrust that has knowledge, whether it's an Eric Del Fiero or Andreas or, you know, Jackson Winklejohn, like whoever it is, like having someone who really understands the sport, who can guide you.
Yeah.
And that's just such a giant resource for a guy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, as the sport explodes and get bigger, you have those fake ones coming in and think they know everything, you know, and they want it to be they want to have a piece of the cake, basically.
Yeah.
But you have like these guys like Eric Del Fiero and Andreas Michael, and they're masterminds, man.
What is Andreas? What is his background? Like
boxing. He was a professional boxer.
Oh.
Back then. He has like 19 or 20 now in his boxing record. So, and then he broke his arm and he had to finish career because his arm. But that's his background, and that's where I got my footwork from. Because, you know, that's where I got my foundation in fighting from. And then I also one thing about a coach, like for Andreas, for example, he or Eric Del Fiero, they don't care about the glory. They don't care about the attention. You know, they don't care about, they are the head coaches, but they take in, if they are honest to me and to themselves, you know, I don't know these things. I don't know the grappling things. I don't know the wrestling things. They learn too as it grows, and they learn with me, but they take in people that, you know, so we cover the whole thing. All the aspects of the game, basically. So
yeah, Eric is one of the most important, but yet the most humble guys.
Yeah, he's super humble.
He's very in the background. There's a few guys like that I really respect. John Crouch from the MMA Lab. He's very similar too. They're not looking for attention, just laying back.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys that aren't looking for attention. They just get it because they're so good. Like for us, a hobby. Yeah. You can keep going on and on. There's a lot of them. But those guys are so important. I mean, it's so critical. Like finding a big camp with great fighters and a fantastic coaching staff is the difference between you realizing your full potential and not. That sometimes is the difference.
Yeah, that's just having the right coach is the key, basically.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Coaches and training partners.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So now, so you give him like full rein in terms
full
of
range,
like everything you do.
And we discuss it all the time. We argue sometimes. We're hugging sometimes. You know, it's like a relationship, man. It's my family too. So you know, that's all it is. I remember we had a really good. We were in Vegas actually for a camp. I thought I was fighting Thiago Silva, and he was putting me in there in the cage with some big ass wrestlers. I wasn't 235 back then. I was like 220. 219 walking around with, These guys was heavy, big American heavyweights, good wrestling guys, and they were just taking me down, like submitting me. And I was like, I stand up in the cage, I throw over my thing. I'm like, it's enough, I can't take it anymore. Let me out of the cage. So I was hitting the door. I wanted out of the cage, and the gym was full of people now, so everybody just froze, looking at me like. And the cage was like on a pedestal, so everybody could see me. I went crazy. So I was hitting the door, and I see Andreas. He's outside the door. He's like doing this.
Nope.
You're staying in there. One more round. I'm telling you, I was so close to.
Meanwhile, when you took John Jones down, you had to be thinking, God damn, I'm glad he didn't open up that door.
Exactly. No. I was surprised when I ended up in that position on top of him. I'm like,
you shocked the shit out of me.
Did this really happen?
I didn't think you were going to go for it. No. So when you went for it and then took him down, we were like, oh, shit.
No, I was shocked. I was laying on top of him. I'm like, wow, I'm actually on top of him. I'm on top of this guy. I didn't even think that was possible, but it wasn't that too hard to take.
You caught him by surprise.
Yeah, I did.
It was pretty awesome.
I think he was surprised too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was pretty fucking awesome. Now, what is a typical day in your camp? Like, do you break up conditioning days with skill work days? Do you do conditioning in the morning? Do you do it after you're done with your skill work? How do you work that?
I do from 10 to 12 sessions a week when I'm in camp. I try to. We have actually the group workouts with the whole group, the whole elite group, in the mornings. And then we do everything from sparring to good kickboxing drills to whatever. That's when the group is training. And it's all the time. It's the same group at the same time every morning. And then the nighttime is more like individual. Okay, what I'm doing today. Yeah, you maybe do five rounds of pads and then you do the sprints. Or it could be either one, or strength, so that's how we do it, basically.
So do you have a separate jiu-jitsu coach, a separate Muay Thai coach? Like, how do you work all that stuff out?
Yeah, the guy that was with me now,
mm-hmm.
Joachim Karlsson, he's actually the national coach of Thai boxing. And he's coaching me in my kicks and my knees and my in my kickboxing. And then I Alan Nascimento, it's a Brazilian Brazilian. I've been living in Sweden many years. He's a family and everything. So he has my jiu-jitsu and my grappling, and he's such a competitive guy. He still competes. He beats me up and he spars with me, basically. That guy, he spars with me, and he makes me learn the hard way.
So you've got just an amazing staff over there.
Amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I love it.
And so when you say you do these 10 to 12 sessions per week, do you have like a board up on the wall where you outline the week ahead, or do you do it day by day? How do you do that?
No, I get a text from Andreas. This is the week.
Today we're doing this.
I just waiting for that text, man. I put the silos on fire. I put my phone like that. I don't want to see it, man. But I have to, man. So that's how it works. So you give me a text. If we do, it could be on the board to have a big web board on the wall. It could be on the wall too. He puts down the session if it's something particular. We have maybe sparring coming in. We have to adapt the schedule a little bit. It's difference on every week. So
yeah, I can imagine it gets.
Are you still training?
Yeah, I still train.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got some serious injuries that I'm trying to heal up right now, though.
What's the injuries?
Two problems. One big one is I got tendonitis in my elbow. I've never had tendonitis before.
And I don't know what that is, though.
It's fucking strain in the tendon that does. If you tendons have low blood supply, so the problem with tendonitis is it takes forever to heal. And
you overstretched the arm.
It was from pulling, from cleans, and from chin ups.
Oh, okay. It's
this one on the inside, this muscle right here, or this tendon right here.
Okay.
Man, I fucked it up. I kept training with it. I kept
getting inflammation in it.
Yeah, real bad, to the point where it wasn't healing. And I did stem cells and PRP. I finally got a hold of it. But this thing right here, I keep it with me all the time. This helped me more than anything. It's a thing called the TheraBand. And what you do is you hold it, because this is the elbow that's injured. So I hold it out like this. I twist it, and then I slowly untwist it with this side. And that therapy, just doing this, cool. I do this like 5-6 times a day. I'll do like 10 reps. That's been like the best thing. That's helped me more than anything.
Will you be able to train now, or you've been now?
Pretty soon. Okay. Pretty soon. I think I'm good in about 2 weeks. I'm going to give myself 2 more weeks.
You have some badass kicks.
Oh, thank you.
That's what I heard. MC.
I'll show you. I can still kick. And I have no problem with my kick.
Flexible?
Yeah, I'm very flexible. Yeah.
Cool.
I did Taekwondo when I was a little kid.
Okay.
I started out with that, and then got into Muay Thai later. But yeah.
Cool. I'm not flexible at all. I have to stretch for an hour before the workouts.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's from my genetics or something. I'm just a stiff
Vikings.
I'm telling you.
Carrying swords and swinging swords all time.
I should be happy if I kick over your knees. I can only move fast with my feet. That's all.
Yeah, but I guarantee you, you could improve that flexibility.
Yeah, no, I'm working on it all. That's the thing I have to. That's the thing I have. Through my whole career, I'm just working on my flexibility and when I'm stepping in that octagon, I'm flexible as hell. But that's just 2 times a year, though. So once you get to
full peak in the full peak of camp, then you're flexible.
As soon as I leave the cage, it's gone. It's
all
gone.
Back
I'm
up.
Telling you.
Are you doing a lot of weightlifting? Is that what it is? You're doing a lot of squats or deadlifts?
It's in my genetics. I think I just I'm super stiff. It depends. I'm not stiff everywhere. It's just my hamstrings are stiff.
When did you start martial arts?
For real, when I was starting MMA, end of 2006.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was fairly late in life.
It was. I've been boxing and stuff, but that's just been an amateur level. I don't even count that as a serious doing sport thing. It was just...
Fucking around?
Yeah, just been playing around.
So you were basically like 18, 19 when you really got into it?
Around there, yeah.
So your body already matured. See, one of the things that you see about kicking in particular is... When you get young fighters before their body is matured, then their flexibility usually stays.
Yeah.
You know? Like if you start karate or something like that.
And you look at Phil Davis, for example. That guy is massive, but still he's flexible as... He's great. He's like
that guy's
a
fucking stud athlete, too. He looks like a superhero.
I know.
Look at his waist-to-shoulder ratio.
I know. It's same with Jimmy, though. Jimmy Manoa. Mm-hmm. I don't put up my t-shirt when I'm training with him. I don't want to... just keep my hoodie on me. Same with Phil.
Yeah. Those guys are jacked. Yeah. I know.
Even if they're off-season. That's the thing. I'm just getting like chubby, or like a big-ass... My farmer body, like these guys, it looks like athletes all year round.
Is that frustrating?
Sometimes.
But is that just
but
genetics?
It's good though when I'm winning the rounds sometimes.
Right, when you're winning the rounds as a fat guy. Uh-huh. For fat guys all over the world. Yeah. So do you watch your diet at all outside of camp?
I do actually. I try to stay away from sugar. When I do sugar, if I do like sodas and stuff like that, candy, whatever, I gain a lot of weight. But as soon as I quit it,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I drop in weight.
Sugar's the devil.
It is. I hate sugar.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst. When you realize what it's actually doing to your body, and then you realize it's everywhere, and that most people that you run into are just eating sugar all day long.
Yeah, and it actually doesn't taste that good if you don't do it.
Right. That's the weird thing, right? Once your gut bacteria becomes acclimated to eating healthy food, you start craving salads and shit.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
So now, when you talk about flexibility, do you ever do yoga?
I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't like that.
No. Vikings and yoga don't mix.
No, I think it's just because I'm so bad at it. And you need patience. You need a lot of patience to do it. And I wish I liked it. Because I would probably need it more than ever. But it's don't get me wrong. I stretch. I do my flexible things in my training and all that. But yeah, put a whole workout in just to stretch your body. I don't have the patience for it.
It's not just that though. That's what's interesting about it. It's a strengthening thing too. It just strengthens your body in an unusual way. I've seen a lot more fighters getting involved in it and really seeing benefits. One of them was Nathan Corbett. You know Nathan Corbett, the Muay Thai champion?
Yeah, I heard about it.
He's doing some interview recently talking about how much yoga he does and how much it's helped his power and helped his movement.
No, I believe it does. I believe it does.
But you're still not interested?
I probably have to think about it.
Well, I was thinking a guy like you who's so driven that trying to succeed, at all costs, trying to figure out what's the best way to succeed.
Yeah.
You might want to investigate that.
I should actually do it. I should do it. I think it will. I think I will. you know, like people are telling me, you know, they're telling me like my kicks, I have to work on my kicks more, I have to use my kicks more in the fights, and they, mm-hmm. they're all right. I need to start doing my kicks more. And the thing, I kick, but I kick with a certain maybe insecurity. I don't know. I think it is from back in the days when I was getting taken down all the time doing my kicks, but nowadays people taking me down, but I'm, you know, they can't hold me down.
Right.
Nobody, if they take me down, nobody can hold me down. So that's just something I need to like start doing even more. Not just kicking to the legs, or, you know, more powerful kicks to the body. My knees are good. I work on my knees all the time, and I'm putting in more in my fights, and I love my knees. I'm getting really high with my knees.
What's one of the beautiful things about MMA and martial arts in general is that there's always room for improvement. There's always things to work on. No one is the best at everything.
Even if you're 31 years old,
yeah,
you're doing this for 10 years, you still have so much to learn.
Yeah.
So that's the good thing with the sport.
No, it's such a comprehensive sport. I mean, I really don't think people appreciate how much thought is involved in the preparation.
Yeah. No, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. So,
how long do you think you'll be doing it? You say 31 like you're old, but you're not. But it seems like you've been doing it a long time, right?
Yeah.
How many years do you think you have left?
I feel really hungry and motivated. I don't think the age is going to be. I don't think my age in terms of, you know, have pain in your body or injuries or anything like that's going to stop me. It's more like as long as I'm having fun, as long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'll do it. And you have guys that are like doing it late in 40s. They have, that's also a good thing with the sport. It's such a such an old age of peaking if you compare it to other sports. So I have a lot more to gain. I can't give you a number, but I have a lot more to give. Telling you.
You've had moments in your career though that you were kind of down, right?
Like
in your career where you're thinking, how much longer am I going to do this?
Exactly. Now, after Anthony Johnson lost, that was a tough one. But I always told myself, like, you know, either I just get a fuck out of there, or I just learn from it and keep going doing it. And I just love my life as it is. You know, I have my I'm so flexible in my schedule, my you know, in my time with the family, and I gain everything from the sport. So I have to do it more, and I'm going to do it more. If I would like, for example, say, you know, fuck it, I don't, after I lost against Anthony, for example, I regret myself like a lot in the late 40s, maybe. I don't know. So.
Well, because you had your finest performance after that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Glover Teixeira fight. Yeah,
and I just feel like that's the thing. You know, I just feel like I'm just keep going like this.
Right.
For every fight. Then I had a couple of setbacks, but I'm still seeing those marginals. I see the numbers going up. I see myself doing better. So I believe in myself 100%, and I believe I have what it takes to take that belt. I believe I have what it takes, and I believe I can beat Jon Jones. I believe 100%. I have what it takes to beat Jon Jones. And I have what it takes to beat DC. So I'm just looking for that opportunity. I want to, you know, step in there. People say I'm not active enough. I don't say enough. But that's never been my thing. I've never been like a Conor McGregor. And if I should start doing what he's doing, people are going to tell me, like, shut the fuck up. You know, I see right through you. You're not that guy.
Right.
You know, I was just like silly myself. So.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, doing what I do. I'm always going to do what I do. And I show what I have when I fight. And I've been a little bit inactive because of my injury now and because of all that. But, you know, whatever people say, I'm down. And I'm just waiting for the next opportunity, basically. I can't wait.
The Rumble Johnson fight was a tough one for you to swallow, too, because it was in Stockholm. It was this enormous event. Everybody was there to see you.
Yeah.
And in that fight, we didn't pick it up while the fight was going on, but you guys collided heads.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a headbutt.
Yeah,
it was a. I'm not taking anything away from Anthony Johnson. That guy is a beast, and he hits hard. He's one of the hardest hitters in the fucking sport.
No doubt. I mean, no one's taking anything away from him. He's truly exceptional.
But the thing is, I was throwing my kick there, and he just came in there, and his forehead hit my chin.
Yeah,
And from and I just blacked out. I went down, I went up again. I was in the match again.
Mm.
But he just, you know, when he gets a taste of blood, he just goes for it. And I should just keep my guard up. I'm very like this.
Right.
You know, I'm very lengthy, and he just caught me as I'm doing all that.
But isn't that one of those situations where until you've been there and you've been that hurt in a big fight like that, it's like the experience is... It's an alien experience.
It is. It's you don't recognize any of it. It's like you can't. Nothing controls your mind. Trying to control your legs, your arms, like this and that. But I was just disoriented, man.
Yeah.
And it was 4 a.m. in one of the big stadium in Sweden. 4 a.m. We filled it up. And
it was a huge place.
It was huge, man. And like I said, 4 a.m, when the people told me like, oh, we're going to do this, I'm like, no, hell, it's not going to happen. How should we manage to fill this place up?
Right.
But still, people went there to see it, and it was just an amazing feeling stepping out there.
Well, for people that don't understand why, they did it to coordinate it with American pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, that was it.
Yeah, it was rough, man. It was a rough loss. And now Rumble just decided he doesn't want to fight anymore, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Every now and then he thinks about it. He says he wants to come back as a heavyweight.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. No, yeah. I don't think he's even going to make it to light heavy anymore.
No.
not those pictures I've seen.
It's so crazy to think that guy fought at 170 at one point in his career.
I can't even see that now.
Yeah, I don't understand how he even did it. I mean, it just
such
even
a massive
sense.
Guy. His neck is like the size of his head. He has not a bit small head. He has like this big round head.
Yeah.
And the neck is the size of his head. So he's a big guy, a really big guy.
I ran into him once while he was fighting 170. He was in the lobby of a hotel. I came downstairs. And I go, Anthony, how much do you weigh? And he starts laughing. He's like, 230. I was like, 230? You weigh 230. You got to get down to 170?
That makes my weight cut easy, man. I'm telling you. That makes my weight cut easy.
His weight cut was horrific. His cheeks used to suck. He has prominent cheekbones, right? So like when his weight cut was fully dehydrated, when his body was like really, really thin, it was like horrible. It's like a skeleton.
Oh shit!
It's like, man, that
guy. That's not good for you at all.
And missed weight a bunch of times too. Yeah.
Now,
you know?
Going up to light heavyweights is probably the best thing he's ever done in his career.
I agree. Yeah. I was kind of stunned when he decided to retire. But what he said was interesting. He said, "I'm not a fighter." He goes, "I'm an athlete." He goes, "I'm just really good at fighting."
I don't know if that's correct though. I would see him more like a fighter. You know, he's a great athlete, but I see him more like a hardcore fighter. Of course he's not, we all are athletes doing this,
right.
but he's more like the fighter. You know, Phil Davis is an athlete. He's an athlete, but this guy, he's a fighter, man, I'm telling you.
You gotta tell him, man. I mean, if you watch his fight with Glover Teixeira, or you watch his fight with Little Nog, you go, "Yeah, that motherfucker's a destroyer."
He does.
He's a destroyer.
You don't want to be in front of him.
And that shows you how fucking tough DC is.
Yeah.
No, DC beat that guy twice.
I threw everything I had at him. Everything I had. I kneed him in the face. I kicked him in his body. Sometimes I hit him, and I saw his eyes go like this, and he just kept going.
DC's an animal.
Yeah, a four-wheel drive just kept on,
he's
on going.
He's a fucking animal, man.
Whatever I throw. And he just, same pace. Yeah. You know, if I fight him again, I will not stand in his pocket. I want to stand in front of him.
So you think that was the critical error? Like 100%. Being right in front of
him? Yeah,
100%. Especially when you have such a reach advantage.
Yeah, I respect him. He's wrestling too much. If I fight him again, I would do it a way different way.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd do something different too, though, right?
He probably do. But he's still doing one thing all the time. He just keeps moving forward. That's what he does.
What you got to do is you got to catch him when he's coming down from heavyweight.
Yeah.
You remember the towel where he's pushing down on the towel.
I saw that. No, I want him to come down. I hope he's coming down.
Yeah.
He can't just like, you know, take that fight now. Even if he wins, he has to come down and defend, and fight.
Listen, if he beats Stipe, he might fight Francis again. Who knows? He might fight Volkov. Who could fight?
No, he has to fight me. He doesn't want to fight me, but he has to fight me.
He has to. In your mind,
he has to fight.
That's
me.
That's what you need.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Yeah,
that's my.
It's him or John. So if John's back first, you would like to be the first guy to fight John.
I will coming back right away.
Yeah,
I'm training.
Right.
I'm feeling great. My shoulder is good. And I'm just waiting for an opportunity.
The light heavyweight is pretty wide open right now.
It is.
Particularly with this decision for DC to fight against Stipe. So you have, you know, it's interesting. Like, you have Ozdemir, who just lost, right? You got your friend Jimmy Manoa. You have a few guys who are at the top of the heap, you know. But you're the standout right now.
I am.
With John being in limbo.
Yeah, he's gone. Nobody knows what's happening with him.
You know, who else stands out to you in that division? Ilir.
Yeah, Ilir. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't fight my teammates at all.
Right, of course.
I don't fight my teammates. Ilir, I've been training with him since I started my career. So Jimmy and Ilir is, you know, we've been saying to each other that whatever happens, we're not fighting each other, you know. The only fight that makes sense for me right now is fighting the top guys. You know, I'm ranked number one right now, so I can't look back. I can't look down. I have to look up.
Right.
What's the next up here? And we take it from there. And like you said, with John Jones, he's in limbo. I hope he comes back. If it doesn't come back, maybe I fight him in boxing. I'll fight him in boxing too.
Why? Does he want to box?
He's been boxing on his Instagram. That's all he do is boxing right now.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't been paying attention to his Instagram.
Nah, he's boxing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see him coming back as a boxer, though. Maybe he just sees that Conor McGregor money.
We could, that's another thing. But we can take it like, you know, maybe a sideshow here. We can box. Whatever. You know?
So you just want to get in there with him somehow or another.
Yeah, somehow.
Somehow or another, yeah. Your competitive drive wants to get in there with him.
That's my... Like I told you, it's bigger than winning the belt.
That's your Mount Everest, yeah, John Jones.
It is.
John's out there going, yeah.
He knows that.
Here he is.
Yeah, there he is.
He's still got that Corvette. Yo, sell that thing. Get a minivan. Drive slow. It looks good, man. Looks real good.
Yeah, you do.
It's got to be so frustrating for him to be in a situation that he's in.
Yeah, you know? I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I can't imagine either. It's fucked up. It's a crazy situation to be in.
Yeah.
You know, well,
did you see the article, Colby Covington?
No, what did he say?
What he said about John Jones?
I don't even want to hear it.
No, okay, we shouldn't.
I mean,
you could
bring it up if you want to, but Colby.
No, he was talking. It was a text like this, just about John Jones, how piece of shit he is. Now, I was even surprised when I saw it myself. You know, I was like, is this right or wrong? I don't know.
John Jones is going to be in front of you one day. Got to be careful. Watch your fucking words.
Yeah.
You're going to get slapped in the face
by
a guy who can kill you with his hands. That's a bad move. I get what Colby's doing. I mean, he's making a lot of noise and trying to do business, you know. And if you fight him, you're going to make a lot of money because a lot of people are going to come to see him get his ass kicked. You know, he's going to fight.
He's not probably on the popular list. He's probably on the I want to see you get knocked out list.
He's in a dangerous situation right now. He's going to fight Dos Anjos.
Yeah.
Rafael Dos Anjos is Brazilian. He talked crazy shit about Brazil, and they were going to fight in Brazil.
He is,
But they moved the fight to Chicago, which, for Colby, thank the baby Jesus.
Exactly. I would say the same thing.
You don't want to be fighting Rafael Dos Anjos,
You don't even want to be close to Brazilian right now if you're Colby Covington. You don't even want to be close to him.
No, I would not go if I was him.
No.
He'd probably go anywhere, man. He doesn't give a fuck. He'll go if the money's right. I'm sure he would. But Dos Anjos right now at welterweight, I think, is a murderer. He's a fucking killer at welterweight because for him, that cut down to 55 was just too big. Too big.
And yeah, he's a big guy.
He's big. I mean, it's just too much of a cut, too draining on his body. And then you see the way he beat Robbie Lawler in his last fight. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Goes through Neil Magny, Robbie Lawler, and you look at how good he looks at 170. You're like,
it's a
holy
tough fight. It's a good fight. It's a good fight.
It's a very good fight.
Yeah. It's a really good fight.
Particularly stand-up. He has a big advantage, I think, over Colby.
Yeah.
Stand-up.
What does he do, Colby? But is he a wrestler?
It's a wrestler.
He's a wrestler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
His stand-up is good. I mean, he beat Damian Maia. He beat him up. But I feel like Maia is... you know, I mean, Maia was coming off of that very, very hard fight against Tyron Woodley. 5 hard rounds, got beat up, and then he's going to go I think he went 3 rounds with Colby, but I just don't think he's the same guy anymore. I think he's 41, I think, Maia.
He's been
40,
in the game
41.
For a very long time.
Long time.
He's been in the game for a very long time.
Yeah, and I think those long, hard 5-round wars like he did with Woodley.
It takes
Woodley,
a toll on you, takes a toll on you.
Not taking anything away from Colby, but I think Colby's style is probably tailor-made for a guy like Maya.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling, very strong.
That's what you usually see. Yeah. Like, wrestlers against Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. Now, you're a fucking decent guy. You don't get in any bullshit. You're not involved in any brawls. You don't get involved in any stupidity. You're an excellent representative of a professional athlete.
Thanks.
What do you think about all this Conor McGregor bullshit? Like, you see someone throwing a dolly at a bus and shattering a window.
No, I don't even have words for it, man. I have no words for it.
What did you think of when you heard the news? I heard the news when I landed. I was in the plane when it was all happening, flying to New York. And when I landed, my phone was like, bzz, 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 all these text messages coming in going, what the fuck is wrong with Conor? What the fuck? I'm like, what happened? You know, and then I checked the news and I was like, oh, Christ. And then I hear that two fights were pulled from the card, then three fights were pulled from the card.
No, Conor McGregor, he's just losing it right now. It feels like he's lost it. I feel like, I've never really been... You know, I respect all the things this does. He's a great businessman. He do what it takes to make money. He knows what it takes to get money, and he does really good. He's a mastermind when it comes to trash talking, man. He takes it to another level. But like this thing he did now, it's just crazy. You don't do that. You don't do that at all. I don't know what it is. Why is he doing it?
Yeah, I don't know either.
Is he drunk as fuck, or is he just... is
I wouldn't like say that's it's a booze. I wouldn't think that's a booze move. That seems more like a coke move. Yeah,
could be. I don't know.
That's, or it just could be part of his act.
Yeah, the thing. Like, do you really take it that far?
Yeah.
Do you really take it that far to just make some noise? I don't know.
Well, what if... My thing is, like, what if that dolly hit the car where Rose was sitting and cut Rose's face up?
No, that was just be...
Fuck, man. Yeah,
that would be crazy.
Michael Chiesa, I'm sad that he got cut, but Chiesa's a tough bastard. Yeah. He'll be fine. Yeah. He's probably pissed off, and he's going to sue Conor, and he'll probably make a shitload of money suing him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what if it hit Rose?
No, that would be bad. That would be really bad. No.
I would feel terrible. The fucking world would hate him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what
oh,
if
yeah.
Rose was blinded in one eye because of that?
Oh, no,
like,
shit. That would be a nightmare.
Real?
What the fuck? That
look,
would be a nightmare.
Ray Borg got cuts in his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's entirely possible.
Yeah, he got glass cuts in his eye?
Yeah, yeah. He got glass shards. He got a scratched cornea.
Are they all suing Conor now? Or, they should be.
I don't know. Find out how many lawsuits. I know Chiesa filed. Chiesa definitely filed a lawsuit or filed a complaint, which will lead to a lawsuit, I imagine. Look, I imagine if I was Conor, I would settle the fucking every single thing outside of court, because if he loses and he gets a felony, he's fucked. He probably won't even be able to come into the country.
No, exactly. No.
Here's my thing. Imagine, switch it around. Imagine if Ray Borg threw that dolly at the bus and Conor was
no,
inside.
He would be he would be smoked.
Be gone. His
career
would be
gone. He will be gone, for sure.
That's one of the more fucked up things about this.
Yeah, yeah, he will be gone.
That you know Conor's getting special treatment.
Exactly. Of course.
He is.
Yeah, of course.
That's not good for anybody.
No, it's not. It's not. And... Like I told you, he's just losing his mind right now. It's you do it to a certain level, and then you just like you just chill. You don't take it further than what it just did.
Yeah.
So I don't have any words for it, man. I just feel like it's terrible. It's terrible for everybody in the sport, man.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible for Conor even because you don't want to be in a position like
that. Yeah, he's making money. I don't know what he made for that Mayweather fight, but I'm telling you, if he keep doing what he's doing, that money is not going to be enough to pay all that shit he has to pay.
No, no. He'll burn right through that money. Well, he's probably burning through that money anyway. Every time you see him, he's got a new Bentley.
Yeah.
And he probably lives in a mansion now.
Oh, yeah, he does. 100%. He has his private jet. I don't know how many bounces. I don't know how many... what you call it? Bodyguards you had when he hit that guy in Ireland, the gangster guy he hit in Ireland. He had a bunch of like bodyguards I heard around it. What do they cost every day? They're not cheap though.
Yeah, that money piles up.
Yeah,
but when you're 29 years old, like Conor, you don't even think about it.
You don't.
He's thinking about now, not the future, and he probably thinks he's gonna make hundreds of millions.
That's
more.
The sad part of it, man.
Yeah.
That's the sad because doing what he's doing. Whatever it is, a billion or whatever it is, it's not a lot of money. It's going to run through you.
Well, there's that. And then there's the thing that really gets me is that what Conor is an exceptional world championship fighter. I mean, that's what he really is. All this other stuff, is the bullshit is going to get in the way of his legacy. I mean, his legacy shouldn't be a boxing match where he was TKO'd by the greatest boxer ever. That's fucking stupid.
Yeah, I know.
His legacy should be the next fight after Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. I know what
Eddie
you mean.
Eddie Alvarez was a masterful performance.
He's been smashing beasts.
Yeah.
He's been taking two belts.
Yeah.
He's just a regular guy from Ireland. He comes to America and he just lives the American dream. Nobody's done before.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's terrible to see all this shit happen.
Yeah, because I'm saying that all these things that are happening, it's bad for him.
Yeah, of course.
It's not just bad for the sport to let him get away with it.
With all this happening, you don't even, like, think of what he's been doing in Octagon.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, just think about setting him up with Khabib, you know, having that fight. Like, Jesus fucking Christ, that would be a giant fight. That might be one of the biggest MMA fights ever to make. Him versus Khabib?
Yeah, Khabib is, what's his record, 25-0?
26-0.
26-0.
26-0.
That's amazing.
And he's barely tested.
Yeah.
He barely gets tested.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You see one little flaw in him, you get all excited.
Yeah.
Because like, ooh, look, he's keeping his chin up.
Who do you think win that fight?
What's that?
Who do you think win that fight?
It's a good question. The question is, can Conor catch him? Can Conor catch him while he's coming in?
Yeah.
And if Conor can catch him, look, Conor can knock anybody out.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you see what he did to Eddie Alvarez. You see what he did to Aldo. Nobody had ever done that to Aldo before.
That's the best strikers in the division.
Yeah. And what Conor has is incredible precision and the ability
He's so fast. His speed, his angles, he moves, create an angle, and he just counter the shit out of the guys, and yeah, that's all he needs.
He also moves unusual. He moves almost like a karate guy.
Yeah, he does.
You know,
he does.
Like wide stance, but then knocks you out like a real pro boxer. Like
the only thing I'm doubting on Conor, you know, he's the best striker and all of that, but does he have the conditioning for Khabib?
That's a good question.
Khabib, he just keeps going. And just,
different animal.
Yeah.
And it's also the wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, Khabib's wrestling is not just a level above everybody else, but multiple levels.
Yeah.
Like, he just...
I heard like, heavy guys, I'm talking about heavyweights, talking about Khabib's pressure on the ground, being on top.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, taking that seat belt around, taking his hands, moving that leg up, you know, just neutralize the guy totally, so...
Luke Rockhold said he never loses a round in training.
Oh, he said?
He said he doesn't lose a round.
Yeah, Khabib.
Khabib doesn't lose a round. He just smashes everybody.
That's insane, man.
Everybody who wrestles with him are like, fuck, that's here we insane. Go. Time to go through the grinder. It's like those fucking guys in Dagestan, man. New York Times had an article about Dagestan wrestling and about how these guys, they have very few options. And so a lot of them, you know, they go towards the dark side and get involved in terrorism, all these other things. And this is the way to go towards the light side.
Yeah,
they
do sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have a different mindset there, too. If you're doing good, if you win the World Games or whatever, they take care of you. They really support you. The whole government, the whole country is carrying you out from the mat, they carry into the... You're a king there.
Yeah.
Just that is... It's a great motivation, man. That's... They're just... Yeah, they're animals, man. They're animals.
Did you see Zabit fight?
Who?
Zabit Magomed Sharapov. He fought on the undercard of...
No, I don't think so.
Holy shit. He's another one from Dagestan.
Another one of those.
Another one, but he's totally different. He's like 6'1", fights at 145...
Yeah, and that guy. Yeah,
the karate
guy. Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
I think his background is actually like, I want to say it's wushu or something like that.
Oh, yeah?
I think he started off as a kung fu guy. But
who did it go? He won that fight.
Kyle Bochniak. Great fight. Crazy 3-round fight. Bochniak just kept coming at him. And then at the end of the 3rd round, Bochniak finally has him cornered up against the cage and he's teeing off on him. Phenomenal fight. I mean, phenomenal fight for the toughness of Bochniak and the skill of Zabit. I mean, fucking phenomenal. Just this ridiculous technique.
And this guy's not even a wrestler. He's a striker.
No, he's a striker, but he's got wrestling too.
Yeah.
I mean, his wrestling is good too, and his takedown defense is very good, and his jiu-jitsu is very good too. But his fucking striking, crazy shit, wheel kicks, front leg roundhouse kicks to the face, switch kicks, just everything.
That's crazy, man.
Everything lightning fast, perfect technique. And here's a big thing, too, is his footwork. When he lands, he's always in perfect position. Everything he does, when he comes down, he's never awkward. He's never like, his legs are never
unbalanced,
crossed up.
Yeah, nothing.
But phenomenal technique.
That's impressive to see. It's impressive to see when when guys are like good strike, guys with good kicks. For example, John Jones, for example, they kick high, they kick from different angles, they kick, and they just land like they haven't kicked.
Yeah.
They land like really good base. They're ready for another, they're ready for a counter, they're ready for this. It's impressive to see.
So for you as a guy who, if you had to say you have one area in your game that needs the most work, you'd say that's your kicking?
Wow. I think, I don't know. Yeah. Of course, kicking is one of the things I think I have to work on a lot, man. I'm far from, I will probably never be a complete fighter. I have to work on everything. You know, I need to keep working on my boxing. I have to keep working on my footwork. I have to keep working on my kicks, my knees, my elbows, my grappling, my wrestling, keep my chin down, guard up, all that shit.
It never ends.
No,
it never ends.
It just keeps going.
Who do you like to watch fight?
I like to watch my teammates fight. I like seeing guys in my division. I should be honest to you. I'm not a guy that really watch fights. I don't watch all the fights. I barely watch any fights. I just fight if I know either my teammates or competition fights. My competition is fighting. I look at the fights, but good title defenses and stuff like that. But I don't barely watch fights.
Do you think it's because it's just too much a part of your life?
I think it's important that you have some distance to your work. It is a work. Even if it's your hobby and your lifestyle and your passion, it's a work, and you need some distance. And my distance, like I told you, is being outdoor. My distance is, you know, being outdoors, hunting, family and friends. You know, it doesn't interest me to watch the fights. It's getting too much of it. Particularly when I'm in camp, I don't watch fights at all. It gets too much.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably spending 5 hours a day just training.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, it gets too much, man. But it's, like I thought, if I know John Jones is fighting, DC is fighting,
right.
Volkan is fighting, I'm watching those fights.
Right. Do you have a guy that's like your favorite guy to watch? Like a Mighty Mouse or someone, or Anderson Silva or someone?
Yeah, those guys. I watch those guys. Yeah, I watch Mighty Mouse. That guy is incredible.
Yeah.
He's hands down, he's the best guy out there right now competing.
Wonder what it would be like if you were that light? Wonder what it would be like if you only weighed 125 pounds?
No, I would be like, so fast. I'm fast and light heavy. I would be, you see my shadow in there, running around like this.
I know, it would be crazy, right? I mean, Mighty Mouse is so fast. One time, I've told the story before, but one time I grabbed him just playing around from behind. I'm like, what's up? I grabbed him. He turned and kneed me in the body 2 times before I even knew he did anything, man. He went, da-da! And I went, oh, dude, that was ridiculous. I'm like, how the fuck did you move that quick?
Like, you know, his fights is amazing to see, and the way he finished his fights, the one he's like throwing the guy, taking that armbar in the air.
Ray Borg, yeah,
yeah, it was just amazing to see.
Yeah, he suplexed him and took the armbar in the air on the way down. I mean, that is fucking video game shit.
It is.
He said he drills that.
Yeah, no, it's insane.
He said that's something he drills all the time, like that.
No, he plays video games a lot, so he probably gets it from the video. I have to try this. He does something in the video. I have to try this, and then he goes and do it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, do you watch a lot of boxing?
Well, I watch the big fights. I watch the big fights. I do, but I'm not really a guy that watch a lot of fights overall.
You see, it's just because, like you said, you need distance.
Distance.
Yeah,
it's not in my interest. You know, I'm not, you know, I got guys in my team. They're like such a nerds. They know everything about everyone.
Mm.
They don't even train themselves. They just know everything about everyone, and that's enough for me. They just tell me, who's this? I asked them. They're like, oh, don't you know? I'm like, no, who's this? Oh, this is this? Yes, the skills. This. I'm like, okay, good. So, yeah.
So, like, when you're in camp, what do you do to try to relax and, like, for downtime? Do you try to read books? Do you watch TV? Do you play video games? Like, what do you do?
I'm actually spending time outdoors.
During camp?
During camp. That's what I do. That's my way to get away from everything. you know, watch a series, hanging out with my family and stuff. But for me, the real distance I get when I'm outdoors hunting or I'm up with dogs or, you know. I don't even have to hunt. I just go out there.
Hike?
Yeah, hike. I got some lands not far from Stockholm. I go out there and just hanging out. You know, sometimes I'm just tracking. Oh, what's this? Oh, that's a wild boar. You know, and I just follow it where it goes, or could be anything. Just out. I like to be outdoors, even if it's like 10 minus degrees or if it's summertime. I'm out all the time.
That's awesome. That's a great way to put things into perspective too, right?
Yeah, and the guys are telling me, they're like, if you put that much time, be like you're doing in hunting, you did that in training, or be not time, but just having that interest.
Yeah.
You know, they all the time telling me that. But don't you
think that those interest things like hunting are a relief for your mind?
But it is. It is. I wish everybody could see that.
Yeah.
It's a healthy way of living, I think.
Yeah, I think for, especially to a guy who has such an intense pursuit, it's probably good to have another thing that you're interested in so that it gives you like a relief from not always thinking about fighting all the time. There's a break. You have because it's obviously hunting is not competitive. So what you're doing when you're hunting is more primal and natural, but also very difficult. Chilling. And time consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like you train, you compete at the gym, you compete in the octagon, you're competing in business, you're competing in everything. Is just a competitive way of, you live a competitive way of it's a competitive way of living, basically, and it gets a toll on you after a while. And when I was young, when I started this sport, I wanted to smash everybody at the gym, all bomb, but now. You know, nowadays I'm like, I know my body better. I know what my body needs. I found a way where I, even if I was doing what I was doing 6-7 years ago, I wouldn't, even if I do that in training wise, being such a nerd in training and just training 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, I wouldn't be a better competitor. I wouldn't do better in fights. Now I basically found a way of, okay, this is what I need to make my life better and make my competition better. I perform much better doing this. I perform much better having that distance from all that competitive things. So yeah, I need it, man. I need it.
So where are you standing right now? You're healed up. You're ready to go. Do you just sit and wait for a call? Your manager informs the UFC that you're ready to go into camp.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go in camp. I'm training right now. I'm healed up. I'm 100%.
So, but how does that work? Do you contact the UFC and try to negotiate something to try to get something going? Do you wait for them to contact you, or do you wait for this Stipe Miocic DC fight?
Basically, I'm just waiting for them to come with something that makes sense for me.
And so there's been no discussion so far?
Not really, no.
That's got to be kind of frustrating.
Yeah, you know, it's been some discussions, but nothing that really I count on or anything like that. It's just been up in the air, and I'm just waiting for something on the table that makes sense, and I'm ready to go, man.
So what would make sense other than John Jones, other than DC? What would make sense? You as the number one contender right now. John's unranked because right now he's currently suspended, but as soon as they put him back in, he's likely to be right up there with you, and then you have DC. I mean, who else in your division makes any sense now? If they were to offer you a fight now, if John Jones is going to be suspended still for another 6 months or whatever it's going to be, who makes sense in your division for you other than DC?
Well, I wish I had an answer to that right now, but I really don't. I just feel like it has to be a meaningful offer. It has to be something that I feel this is right. This is what I want. I feel like man, in my position, in my career right now, every fight has to mean something.
Yeah,
every,
that's what I'm getting at. Is that there's, with you at the top, really the fight to make is one of two, DC or John. Those are the two fights.
Yeah, or it could be something else too, Joe. But it has to feel right, and it has to be something meaningful,
like a big main event on Fox or something like that. Yeah, something where it's a big fight to showcase
something good, man. Something good, and you know everybody knows that when I'm stepping up in that octagon, I'm gonna perform and I'm gonna make a show, and I'm looking for that goal. That's all I'm seeing.
Well, listen, man, I'm a fan. It's been a pleasure to be able to commentate your fights. I really enjoy watching you fight. I really enjoy watching you develop the whole process. And I really appreciate you coming on here, man.
Appreciate it, Joe. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, man. Thanks for having me, man.
And good luck to you.
Appreciate that.
The Mauler, ladies and gentlemen.